This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is employment law, focusing on implicit bias and discrimination in the workplace. I think you'll find this very interesting. My guests are Allison Elgart, Legal Director at the Equal Justice Society, which represents employees. Her office is in Oakland. Charles Thompson, also I'll be referring to him as Chuck. He's the managing partner of Paul Cinelli Law Firm in San Francisco, representing management. And my good friend Thomas Lenz, a partner in Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo Law Firm in Pasadena and Cerritos. And Tom is the vice chair of the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, and I have to be really nice to him. Believe it or not. But at this time, also, we are doing our Call a Lawyer Night, and actually, I would like you to be able to talk with our attorneys. And here's the number for Call a Lawyer. This is our monthly Call a Lawyer Night. We'll have several attorneys for you to speak with off the air. The number is 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. The topics are criminal law, family law, workers' compensation law, estate planning, trust and probate law, employment law, landlord-tenant law. And for that, I want you to take down this number, if you would, for Tad Devlin. He'll be at his office, 415-734-7891 or 415-361-8010. And then we have tax law. And for tomorrow, bankruptcy law, Thursday, August 31st, Leon Bayer will be available if you'd like to jot down this number between 9 a.m. and noon tomorrow, 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additionally, it's funded by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And my guests are very experienced in this, and we're going to start with, actually, Allison, who's going to define for us what implicit bias is.
Sure. So implicit bias refers to stereotypes or attitudes that operate without an individual's conscious awareness. So people experience these towards a broad range of historically disadvantaged groups, can be with respect to race, national origin, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, age, disability. And everybody has these implicit biases. They operate everywhere and pretty much permeate everything. So it's important for people to learn to understand where their biases are and how their biases might affect how they act towards others. And there's actually ways that people can measure their own biases and their own implicit associations.
How can they measure them?
Well, Harvard researchers developed a test called the Implicit Association Test, or the IAT. People can go to, if they Google Project Implicit, they can take a whole variety of tests that measure their associations and their reaction time to responding to pictures that flash or words that flash on the screen. And they can measure their own biases or implicit associations that they might have in a whole variety of, it could be, you could take a test on race, you could take a test on how you react to Native Americans or how you react to women and men, family, career. So there's a whole variety of tests that people can take, and they aggregate. It's all confidential that you don't give your identifying information, but they aggregate the information over time and come up with results that show really where everyone who has taken the test, where they lie, in the broad spectrum.
How will someone find the IAT? Do you have a website that you can give?
It's Project Implicit, or if anyone Googled Harvard or Implicit Association Test, it'll be one of the first things that come up.
You have your office, the Equal Justice Society, has a website. Do you have information on that people might be able to learn from?
Yes.
You want to give the website?
Sure. It's www.equaljusticesociety.org. Mm-hmm. And we also have a lot of implicit bias resources on there. We also are starting to form what's called an implicit bias network that combines practitioners and academics researchers, activists trying to get these resources to everyone, because we want everyone to be aware of these and to be using the research that's out there, because we really we work at the intersection of social science and the law and race, and so we want other people to be able to use the research and the studies that are out there.
Give that website again, would you?
www.equaljusticesociety.org, and then implicitbias.net is the Implicit Bias Network.
That you will find on your website.
Yes.
Tom, you wanted to do this program. You and I have been doing programs together now for several years. What is it, how does implicit bias manifest itself? What do you see happening?
Well, I think in day-to-day communications, day-to-day activities, there are things that are said, things that are done, choices that are made, which can many times be something that someone thinks is even-handed. Someone thinks they're being neutral, they are being unbiased, but in truth, it could be life experience, it could be some sort of perception, learned behavior, what have you. It manifests itself in the words that are used, the choices that are made, and how we express ourselves and just do things in day-to-day life. And it could be anything from, you know, how you address a neighbor, something you might say to a coworker, a decision that you might make in hiring someone, how you treat an incident of misconduct in your workplace. All of these sorts of situations, if you look into the implicit bias side of things, you may find that certain groups are treated differently from others under the same circumstances.
Give us a simple example, if you could.
Well, I think that a simple example might be a supervisor who speaks to his female employees, using terms like gal or
babe, or babe.
or exactly, or perhaps assuming that certain tasks are not appropriate for females compared to males. There may not be anything overtly said in regard to bias, but the actions, the steps taken may result in some sort of unequal treatment, and something which in my practice representing employers could yield a discrimination claim.
How if someone has been brought up during his lifetime, and I think there's going to be more prejudice, if I can say this, with respect to how males express themselves as opposed to women, females. Chuck, what is it? How do you, if someone has a prejudice or there's an implicit bias, how do you really help somebody to realize, I mean, you represent management. How do you help your clients, the employers, that people who are employing others, how do you help them to realize that, hey, you got to realize you've got a bias here, and you got to do something about it? How do you do this?
Well, our objective from the management side is always to make the employee-employer experience better. So what we're doing is we're using this social science that's been developed. It's always been around. The fact that we call it implicit bias means that it's deeply entwined in our own sociology, our own personal sociology. And to take a step backwards just for a minute, what Tom was talking about, our social scientists have also put a label on called a microaggression, which is something that is short of an obviously biased or bigoted statement, but is demeaning in the workplace. So our objective in making the workplace a better place for everyone is to process this and educate people and help them recognize the various issues that they encounter through the testing process, through training, through education, so that they can heighten their awareness and create a better experience for the employee and the employer both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the situation that you mentioned, that could be dealt with on any sort of an individual to a group training for management. And where we see the application of this, there have been a lot of very interesting studies that have been done, but one of the applications of implicit bias in one of our symphonies, we noted that there were more men being selected in the violin section than women. And nobody could exactly figure that out because everybody was equally qualified. So the symphony backed into it and started doing settings where when people would come in to play the violin and do whatever it was they were going to do for the symphony, it would be done, the people would come in behind a blind, behind a curtain.
Well, that's a good way, sure.
Wearing socks.
Yeah.
So that you couldn't even hear the footfalls as they would come in to try to do
this. I love it.
So there are a lot of practical ways we can approach the situation.
My, that's fascinating. I've never heard that story before. Actually, implicit bias manifests itself in hiring day-to-day and discipline and all the rest of this. Tom and Chuck, you both represent employers. Is that right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. And Allison, your office, the Equal Justice Society, speaks for and tried to advocate for employees. How do you help employers who are prejudiced and have not been, let's say, supportive of women or minorities or whatever? How do you help them to be more aware and, hey, we're human beings, let's treat each other equally? How do you do that?
Well, that's a big question.
I know it is.
There are a lot of ways, both big and small, to tackle that. You can have trainings for people, but it's been found that things like diversity trainings and inclusion trainings are not as effective unless there's a form of monitoring or feedback that comes from them. So it's not just a one-time training. Mm-hmm. It's actually reinforcing some of the things that people have learned and maybe having task force to take a look at all areas of a company's practices, because it can affect hiring. So perhaps when you're hiring, you block off the names at the top of the resume could be one thing. You know, it's really about trying to take away some of the subjectivity and some of the associations that people may have. So there was a resume study, for example, when identical resumes received 50% more callbacks when there were interviews, for interviews, when there were names such as Emily or Greg on the top instead of Lakeisha or Jamal.
Oh my.
And so the bias starts even just for people getting in the door. And then once they're there, you're looking at things like promotions and evaluations. There was a law firm study that looked at memos written by third-year associates, and these were made-up memos, but they had partners at law firms rank the memos, and they found more errors when they were told that it was an African-American associate as opposed to a white associate. So that's also like a confirmation bias. People are expecting people to have different levels of competence when mm-hmm. that's not true.
Yeah.
And so there are ways that I think all companies can think about standardization and taking away the subjectivity, having diverse groups of people making the hiring decisions, having diverse groups of people looking at evaluating people and their job performance, and also evaluating what standards and metrics they're using for that performance. For example, are they looking at, whether someone's really aggressive, or are they looking at, how someone is a real go-getter, or, how articulate they think they are, or whether they're a good fit. And all of those are subjective factors where bias can come in.
Of course. All right, everybody. It's also, by the way, we're doing this program live on Wednesday. This is August 30th. It's also our monthly Call a Lawyer night. The number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. We have several very fine attorneys here in the conference room who've been doing this for a long time. I'll let you know who they are a little bit later. But the topics, legal areas are criminal law, family law, workers' compensation law, estate planning, trust and probate law, employment law. Landlord-tenant law is handled by Tad Devlin. Tad is at his office, and I'll give you a couple of numbers for him right now. 415-734-7891, 415-734-7891, or 415-361-8010, 415-361-8010. We also have tax law, real estate law, and then tomorrow, if you want to put this down on a sheet of paper for bankruptcy law, if you're being chased by a creditor, Leon Baer will be available. Here's his number. He'll be available tomorrow, August 31st from 9 a.m. to noon. 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. So if we are doing this, how do we, the two gentlemen who are representing employers, how do employers, Tom, go about trying to make their employees, their managers, whoever it is, more aware and come through, and their clients, your clients, more aware that, hey, we do have this implicit bias. There's no question about it. How do we improve it? What do we do?
I think it's going to vary significantly with the employer.
Well, of course, yeah.
And each company, each facility for that matter, has its own culture. And I think it's going to take leadership within the company to look at this issue and say, this is an important issue not only for the quality of the workplace and employee retention, but also for productivity, liability, and we need to control it. Mm-hmm. We want to be a destination employer mm-hmm. rather than someone that continues to have challenges in hiring and retaining people. So that might mean...
What does that mean by a destination employer? I've never heard this term before.
It is a workplace where people want to be.
Ah.
Because you are okay. A model employer.
Gotcha.
And I think a company that approaches things in a mature, rational fashion that way is going to look at perhaps having assessments. And that's not to necessarily out people who have biases, but to try to work with them and to try to help people understand, you know, there are issues here, and there's always something we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
And you assess, you train, you teach people about the potential liabilities and how they can be more effective and protect not only the company but the employees. And I think also wrapped into that is having good policies. We spend a lot of time in our practice developing and reviewing workplace policies. And in truth, we know that most people don't read them. But if somebody gets sued, they are very relevant. And you certainly want to comply with the law. And in your business, you want to practice what you preach.
Mm-hmm.
And your policies can be very, very helpful to send a message to management and to the employees that this is what we stand for. We don't stand for violating the law. We don't stand for treating people in an unfair way. And, you know, we're going to hold people accountable if they violate our rules.
And how do you hold them accountable?
If there is an act of misconduct, some sort of issue where a policy has not been followed, that might mean discipline.
How do you go about if someone has been brought up in a way that they are very prejudiced against, if I may put this out, a Caucasian employer who's been brought up in a Caucasian society may well be inherently prejudice toward black people, toward Mexican Americans, etc. How do you help somebody like that become realize that, hey, in our society, we have to change that? How do you do that, Chuck?
Well, the good news from our social scientists, again, is that we found that bias is something that is somewhat malleable. So some of the best success has been through sensitivity training. And often, if you can get the individual to literally walk a mile within the shoes of whoever or whatever his or her bias may be, to have that actual experience, because oftentimes we find people that have these really significant biases are operating in a silo or encapsulated in some way where they haven't had a diverse experience. So increasing their experience to those of whom they may have the bias towards, getting them out in the community, getting them working with people, getting them on diversity committees, getting involved in issues that really matter in their community to the folks that serve their business, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. work at their business, perhaps their vendors. Are here in Northern California as lawyers on the management side, our clients have made diversity a number one priority. I've seen general counsels get up at events and talk about quality, cost, and diversity, not necessarily in that order. So it's a real driver, and I think in Northern California at least, a lot of our clients up here are tech clients, and they're really blazing the way towards making inroads and studies and efforts to increase social awareness in the workplace so that we do treat each other more fairly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think through making that social effort, getting folks out in the community, working with people who have real needs so that they can see what their needs are, often changes those attitudes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say to that, Allison? Please.
Well, I think that's right. I think one of the key aspects to changing people's associations and trying to reduce prejudice and stereotypes is working on diversity. There have been social science studies that show that interracial interactions can actually reduce people's prejudices and biases. And the more interracial interactions they have, the less racial anxiety that people may feel mm-hmm. in those interactions, and the more comfortable they may feel, making the workplace a more comfortable environment for everyone. But it's also, I think, looking at making the workplace more diverse and looking also at who's at the top and who's making the ultimate decisions. You know, there was a study where I think in 2015, a big tech company made a big effort to try to incentivize recruiters to hire diverse find diverse engineering mm-hmm. candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out and found, you know, and they gave them extra credit for diversity hires. So they reached out to engineering schools in Africa, and they looked at college students from a wide variety of backgrounds. But then ultimately, the decisions at the top were made mostly by the white and Asian leaders of the tech company. And they were then looking at you know, alma maters and looking at sort of traditional metrics for hiring. And so the actual diversity didn't translate in the hiring process. And so it's also looking at the metrics that people are using when they're hiring. You know, what are the standards? What's really important for a particular position? You know, what qualities and characteristics and qualifications do people need? Sometimes that may be life experience instead of going to an Ivy League school, for example. But a lot of the metrics that people have are based on their own experiences. So if you went to an Ivy League school, you often want to hire other folks who went to that Ivy League school because that's what you know and that's what you're familiar with. So it's also getting out of your own standards and really looking at what does the position require and how do we make this a fair process.
If someone feels he or she is, let's say, the victim of a prejudice, a bias, how does that person, and this is in an employment situation, how does that person go about trying to do something? For example, if this is a woman who has experience, and yet maybe there's some younger male who comes in and the employer is paying the younger male who doesn't have the same experience more than this experienced woman. How do you deal with something like that? Chuck.
Can I jump in? The one distinction I want to make is that what we're talking about with implicit bias and microaggression, these are things that are part of stereotyping, and are really issues that, if addressed, should make the workplace a better place. So I do want to make a distinction between that and actual discrimination and harassment. If someone feels that they're actively being discriminated against or harassed in the workplace, there's the whole ladder that they can go through, starting with their own HR department and moving through the state agencies and then the court systems. But really what we're talking about here, and I don't know if we differ on this, are the issues that can diversify our workplace and make it a better, happier place for everybody in the workplace.
Let me come back to you, Allison, if I can. And I want you to give your website again so that people who are listening to the program, maybe they get it delayed because the first half hour is the statewide version, which we do record and send out to a number of stations in California. If someone feels that they are a victim of implicit bias, do you have something on your offices, your entities, website that can help them to let's say progress and see what they might do to improve the situation where they're working?
We don't have direct resources about the resources that we have are more talking about the social science research out there and the studies to back up the fact that there are biases in these situations, and the fact that the importance of diversity and the importance of having a comfortable work environment where everyone feels like they belong and everyone feels like they're represented. So I guess in some way there are resources for people who, if they do feel like there is a lot of bias in their workplace, then they can, you know, go talk to HR, and there are people who can do trainings, and there are resources that they can bring to their HR department or to the diversity task force that they can then try to use to address it in the workplace. Because it's not as much on an individual basis, it's much more on a workplace basis. And these issues are often structural and not just individual. And so people have to, you know, work on addressing the issues because they're unconscious or implicit biases, they might not even be aware of them, but they are affecting decision making at every step along the way, from hiring to, you know, who gets evaluated in a certain way, who gets promoted. And so it's really about looking at the entire workplace and looking at the environment and trying to make a difference there. And so we certainly have resources to do that. And the website is www.equaljusticesociety.org. And then the Implicit Bias Network is linked through our website.
Okay. All right. Tom, you and I have been doing programs now for several years together. Why did you want to do this?
I think that there is a real issue today in the workplace that it of enhanced importance because of the current political and cultural climate, where I think there is a certain belief prevailing in certain segments of society that maybe politically correct things are out the door, and I can say what's on my mind because of other things that have happened in our country. And I think it's important to correct people on, you know, what the law is.
All right, everybody. I want to give you our toll-free number for you to call in if you have questions in the area of implicit bias or discrimination in the workplace. Please join us. Don't wait until the end of the hour because it'll be too late. Here's our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. I have some very experienced guests with me on this issue of implicit bias and discrimination in the workplace. If you have questions in other areas of employment law, please don't feel limited in terms of calling in. But let me tell you who I have here, and they are very experienced people. Tom Lenz and I have been doing programs together for a number of years. Tom will be the chair-elect, actually, next week. He is the chair-elect of the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, which has been funding this program now for, oh, I don't know, it's at least 25 years. He's a partner in the law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo, which is in Pasadena and Cerritos, California. We also have Charles, and I've referred to him as Chuck Thompson. He's the managing partner for Paul Cinelli Law Firm in San Francisco, which represents management. And again, also Tom Lenz's firm represents management. And last but certainly not least is Allison Elgart. She's the legal director at the Equal Justice Society. Its office is in Oakland, and she gave you the website for it, www.equaljusticesociety.org, all one word. And so if you have a question, a comment, or whatever, we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, August 30th. Join us, 866-798-8255. It's also our Call a Lawyer night, by the way, and I want to give you that phone number again, and I'll let you know who's here. That is 800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For criminal law, we have Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law. He's also the chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. For family law, we have Janet Lee Frankel, a certified specialist in family law. For workers' compensation law, we have Robert Wyman, a certified specialist in workers' compensation law. For estate planning, trust, and probate law, we have Mark Seidenfeld. For employment law, we have Charles Wish. For landlord-tenant law, we have Tad Devlin. Tad's taking calls at his office this evening, and that's 415-734-7891 or 415-361-8010. For tax law, real estate law, he's also a real estate broker, is Frank Adam. And for bankruptcy law, tomorrow, if you're being chased by your creditors, it's Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy. He'll be available tomorrow, August 31st, from 9 a.m. to noon. The number is 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, it's 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, and that number is, I had it here a moment ago, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Most counties, with the exception of just a few in California, have a bar association and lawyer referral service. The beauty of this is you can call your own during normal business hours, tell them what the problem is. They'll do the best to try to find someone for you who's experienced. They'll set you up for a half an hour consultation, and with minor exception, for half an hour, you'll pay somewhere between $25 to $35. It's a great way to get some basic information, so I hope you can take advantage of this. Additional funders for your legal rights are the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So for those of you who would like to call in, don't wait until the end of the hour. Please join us with your calls at 800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer, and our toll-free number for On the Air, 866-798-8255. And we have Dave calling from Visalia. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing this evening?
All right, thank you.
I'm calling because I find this whole topic rather interesting. I am a blind person. And I do take rather. I happen to be somewhat involved in commenting to our local newspaper, one of our local papers here in the San Joaquin Valley. And I noticed that one of the gentlemen who very much styles himself as liberal, absolutely politically correct, you know, everything up on down the line. And knows quite well that I'm out there, but you know I'm the only one. He said he was talking about something anti-Trump. I don't even remember what it was, but his comment was, "Even a blind man with half a blank hole could see." And then he goes on. It appears to me that the physically disabled are the last people in society who are freely trashed with no fear of retaliation, no fear of whatever. I mean, I find it rather sad that after, you know, how long is the American Disabilities Act was 1990? Here we're in 2017, and we're still, you know, treated in many respects like the slaves of old. And I had certainly in my own employment experience back in 1988, I was told unequivocally. I worked for a local county here, and we had change of supervisors, and I was told unequivocally that I was unwelcome to work there, but they couldn't fire me because there were no grounds. And, you know, this just goes on. And
Dave, you were told this because you feel it was because this supervisor felt that because you were blind, you were not someone he or she would like to have continue?
That had to be because it was said to me on my occasion of our first meeting.
Ah, very interesting. Well, let me get some comments for you, Dave. If you'll turn your radio back up, pardon me, go ahead. Okay, I guess he's gone back. All right, again, everybody, we'll get some comments for you. But again, our number for On the Air is 866, it's toll free, 866-798-8255. If you want to speak with any of the lawyers for Call a Lawyer Night, our monthly Call a Lawyer program, 800-525-9917. And that's off the air. So what comments do you have for Dave, who actually said that he feels that there's little justice for someone who has this kind of disability of being blind? Tom, what do you have to say to him?
Well, I think that what Dave has said is unfortunately very common.
Yeah.
And I am, listening to that, wanting to express that, you know, there are laws that not only at the federal level but at the state level, which protect disabled persons, and whether it's an explicit form of bias or an implicit form of bias, if the facts that are presented make a case, show some sort of tangible loss, damage, there may be an issue there to be pursued, whether it's employment, whether it's public accommodations. There are a number of different issues that can arise, and unless there is, you know, something bona fide and not discriminatory, I would think that an employer, someone providing public accommodations, whatever it might be, should be very mindful that the liability could be severe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, I would agree with that. I mean, Dave, what you were subjected to, I think your initial comment was there was someone in your community that was casting some aspersions about the fact that you're blind. That's a classic example of what we would refer to as a microaggression. And the term itself doesn't really do itself justice. It was something that was researched by a Harvard psychiatrist to explain many of the nasty things that were said about African Americans. And again, this is 1970, so this is only a few years after the Civil Rights Act of 1964 had occurred. And what we found is that there are people that say things that, you know, the guy that made the comment about the blind person probably didn't actually mean it in a mean-spirited way. It was just a very insensitive, hurtful thing to hear from your perspective. And I would echo what Tom was talking about. You know, certainly if you were discriminated against because of your disability, there are a number of different avenues to have been pursued there. What we hope to do is, through sensitivity training, through heightening the public's awareness, to decrease those hurtful sort of things that are said to people in the workplace, and even societally. And I shared Tom's concern that there is, especially recently with what's gone on in Virginia recently, there are some concerns about people being a bit more sensitive about what they have to say.
Yeah. What comments do you have for Dave, Allison?
Well, I agree with what both Tom and Chuck have said. You know, it's really unfortunate, and I'm sorry that Dave had to experience that. And I think, you know, as both Tom and Chuck said, that's common. And I think a lot of people are not aware of their own biases or their own statements that they're making that would be considered microaggressions, because they're not in the person's shoes. They haven't experienced these things themselves, or they're someone who doesn't have to think of these things every day. You know, I know.
Because they've been lucky.
Right.
They've been
and
lucky.
And they've been privileged.
Yeah.
Or privileged.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And so I think people go through life not realizing, you know, the effect that these things have on others. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a study that showed that 64% employees of color experienced microaggressions daily, weekly, monthly in the workplace. And so, you know, there are also there's also intersectionality, where people from different marginalized groups experience multiple levels of bias or discrimination. You know, we had litigation against a school district that involved students with disabilities, African-American students, both with and without disabilities. And the students with disabilities were disciplined at much higher levels than the students without. And the students of color were disciplined at much higher levels. And then there was the intersection of race and disability. And you had comments from people that said things like, oh, these are bad kids, you know, and their behavior problems, rather than looking at what their disabilities were and what accommodations and mm-hmm. services and interventions they needed to help them succeed. And I think the same thing would apply in the workplace. And so we have to really address and recognize people's biases and call people out for them. And, you know, those of us in privileged situations also need to call people out. You know, as we're talking about this political climate, it's up to all of us to really call people out for these things and make people aware of when they are making these comments and reflecting their own bias that they might not even be aware of.
Tom, I know you want to say something.
Yeah, a couple things. In connection with the role that Chuck and I play with the Executive Committee of the State Bar, and with my role incoming as chair, one of the things I want to do, and I'd like to mention here, I want to do outreach to groups that need education on these types of issues. And we will be providing people to go to different communities in California if there is a need to present on these issues, to make sure that the public learns how to address these issues and learns how to identify them. And the other thing I would mention is, in my law practice, one of the things I am doing in light of this climate is I am calling upon companies, I am calling upon the nonprofits that I work with to assess their policies and to reaffirm their values as corporations, as citizens in the community, to be opposed to these sorts of practices, whether it's harassment, discrimination, microaggression, implicit bias. We need to take steps, I think, now more than ever to reaffirm what we stand for.
Tom, in light of what you're talking about, once you become the chair of the Labor and Employment section of the State Bar, in terms of going out and trying to educate the public so that we don't have discrimination, we don't have implicit bias, etc., how does someone get in touch with you or the section or whatever?
They could contact the Labor and Employment Law Section staff at the State Bar of California in San Francisco. Their office is downtown San Francisco. They could reach out to me. They could reach out to really any member of the executive committee, and we are listed on the webpage for the State Bar of California. That's calbar.org.
Yeah, calbar.org. It's calbar.org. In case you're interested, it lists all the different sections, and if you go to the Labor and Employment Law section, it will list who the members are with phone numbers, will it not?
It will provide access to individual links, which can take you to the individual members' profile page,
okay.
And that
right.
way you can connect up.
Okay. What I want to do is I want to give you, in case you have an employment law question for my guests, our toll-free number again is 866-798-8255. Again, this is our monthly Call a Lawyer night. Whether you listen to the live program or not, if you get the program delayed, keep in mind that we do have Call a Lawyer once a month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. We're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, August 30th, but we usually do it on the fourth Wednesday of the month. And the toll-free number that you can call right now to speak to any one of the lawyers is 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. And if you're landlord-tenant law, Tad Devlin is doing that tonight. Tad's at his office. Let me give you that phone number, 415-734-7891, 415-734-7891, or 415-361-8010. If you are being chased by your creditors, Leon Bayer will be available tomorrow. That's Thursday, August 31st from 9 a.m. to noon. His number is 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. And I'd like you to know that all of these attorneys who are doing this for Call a Lawyer that here this evening at KLW or tomorrow with Leon Bayer, this is the generosity of their time. This is no obligation on your part whatsoever, but they have the best of intention to try to help you if they can. So join us with either on Call a Lawyer or join us here live on the program at this point. I received an email a few days ago from a woman who I will pose to you now, and I've given you copies of her email. And here's what she says, and I'd like you to respond to this if you would. A few months ago, I found out that a male coworker with the same job title, less experience, and less seniority than me was being paid significantly more than I was. When I brought my concerns to the resident HR, Human Resources Department, they were immediately taken up to the regional HR department. Regional HR offered me a small raise that would be contingent upon my work performance, but refused to bring me up to my coworker's wage, citing more product knowledge and better overall fit for the job on his part as the reason for the wage discrepancy. I negotiated, saying that I was a direct supervisor to a group twice the size of his team and had 3 years more experience doing so. Finally, the regional HR offered me a higher wage and said they would reduce my coworker's pay to match mine. I quit soon after this, but it nags at me. What comments do you have about this? Tom, would you start on this? What comments do you have for this listener to the program?
This sounds to me like an issue of discrimination in pay. And California law has really beefed up the rules in this area. And you don't have to have the exact same job as someone you're comparing to. It really needs to be substantially similar. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't a good reason for a difference in pay, and the difference could be attributed to a protected category such as gender, you may be entitled to, you know, recover for that that loss, that difference, and maybe you might be entitled to other relief too. So I don't know the time frames on this to assess potential timeliness or untimeliness of a claim under these, you know, recently enacted laws or the laws that pre-existed them. But I think that you know, these are real issues. These are the sorts of things that happen all too often.
One of the things that this listener who sent me this email said, she started off the email to me, is, I have a question about California's Equal Pay Act and Senate Bill 1676, which amends the Labor Code 1197.5 and came into effect this January. Is there something further you'd like to say about this?
Well,
Chuck, if you would. No, the
California law, California legislators have acted recently to put more teeth into the Equal Pay Act, which has been around for some time, but we've all seen the statistics where men are still getting paid more than women are in the workplace, sometimes by a significant margin. I think California is a little bit closer than some of the other states, but our legislators did have plenty of reason to go ahead and put more teeth into the act. We haven't seen a lot of litigation on this yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think things are still probably warming up at the plaintiff's bar on these issues, but we do anticipate seeing more equal pay cases in the near future. What we've seen classically from the management side are more discrimination cases along this line, where you would see a claim or even a class claim that women in the workplace are being paid less, which can be very, very significant to companies. We do see management addressing this. We offer equal pay audits to all of our clients as a component of our counseling. We'll go in and do a wage and hour audit, no matter how big, no matter how small the
company. When you say we will, who is
the
we?
The firm will.
Your firm.
Our firm will, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And most management side firms do offer that that product, that they will go in and do an audit and ensure that there is an equality throughout the ranks.
And this is especially important because there are reporting requirements that cover employers and will be taking effect next year, unless something changes, where you will be required to, if you're a certain size, to lay out how you pay people and to break it down by different categories.
Very interesting.
And it will be available there as a matter of public record for employees and their attorneys to decide, gee, was there unequal treatment? Was there maybe an issue that we should raise either in a demand or in litigation?
Is this a law that will take effect January 1st of 2018? Or
It'll be a little after that. I believe it's March.
It March?
The EEO-1 forms. And I believe California has an analogous requirement that is being considered, if not having been approved already. Do you know, Chuck, if that's been approved?
I believe it has. But, you know, the other thing, Chuck, is from the management side, California has an extremely robust plaintiff's wage and hour bar. So the number of class actions that are filed in California far outstrip any other state in the union. So management really needs to be aware of these issues and acting on them very promptly, because if they are out of alignment, they're subjected to very significant fees associated with a class action claim.
So with respect to the woman who sent me this email, if she were timely at this point, if this was something that occurred within the last year or two, what might she do?
She might be able to file a claim for her losses with the state of California, or she might want to contact her own personal attorney and take action in court.
When you say file something with the state of California, what department is that?
I believe that's the Department of Industrial Relations, the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement.
Yeah. Department of Labor, she could also probably file with the DFEH if she had some sort of
DFEH, what is that?
The Department of Fair... You caught me on there.
Fair Employment, Fair Employment and Housing,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
There you are. Well, all right. You've been, by the way, everybody, you've been very quiet out there. I don't know what's going on, but you've been awfully quiet. We do have a couple more minutes if someone would like to call in on our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Also, our attorneys for Call a Lawyer will be here another few minutes, 1-800-525-9917. And I want to thank Jeff Hayden for Criminal Law, Janet Frankel for Family Law, Robert Wyman for Workers' Compensation. Robert, by the way, will be the guest host next week for another program on workers' compensation law. For Estate Planning, Mark Seidenfeld, Charles Wish for Employment Law, Tad Devlin for Landlord-Tenant Law, and that again, his number 415-734-7891. Frank Adam for Tax Law, Real Estate, Leon Baer tomorrow, August 31st from 9 a.m. to noon, 1-800-477-3111. What I want to do, I think we have one more caller here who I'd like to see if we can take that call. We're getting awful close to the end of the program, but I would like to take it if possible. And let me just mention that if for any reason you want to hear this whole program again, it's available as a free podcast, www.kalw.org/subscribe. Jean, we have about half a minute. Go ahead.
Well, I'll make it quick. My name is Jean Hyams, and I'm the president of the California Employment Lawyers Association, which is what I think was just recently referred to as the robust
Very quickly, Jean, if you would. Very quickly.
Robust plaintiff bar. Right. Well, I just wanted to provide our website address, www.cela.org. We're the lawyers who represent employees. And I want to thank the management colleagues who've been on this panel for coming forward and talking about the importance of understanding implicit bias.
Say the website again. Jean, say the website again.
www.cela.org.
Thanks so much. Glad you called. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. It's been wonderful. Time went too fast. My guests have been Allison Elgart, Legal Director at the Equal Justice Society in Oakland, the website equaljusticesociety.org, Charles Thompson, who I refer to as Chuck, Managing Partner of the Paulsonelli Law Firm in San Francisco, Tom Lenz, a great supporter of this program, who will be the Chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar in 1 week, and he is a partner in the law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Lawyer, Rood, and Romo. The website for the California Bar, and you might, if you want to look for the Labor and Employment Law Section, is calbar.ca.gov. Thank you very much for joining us, the three of you. I really appreciate it. Next time on Your Legal Rights, we're going to be doing a program on actually a further discussion of workers' compensation law and current issues and problems facing workers in California. Guests will be Jason Marcus, President-elect of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, also known as CAW, CAAA, and Robert Wyman, a member of CAW, who will be the guest host next week, that is. It'll be my wife's and my 42nd anniversary. That's why I won't be here. They are both, by the way, Robert and Jason are both certified specialists in workers' compensation law. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.